This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, February 23rd of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Boulder Beat's Shea Castle will join us for a recap of last night's five-hour-long city council meeting. We'll hear about new legislation that could help Coloradans with past criminal records clean their slates. As always on Wednesday morning, we'll have Chris Moore's commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC update is at the bottom of the hour, and then it's the Hightower Lowdown, followed by a public affair. Today, Rosana Longobetter will feature organizers of the Voces Vivas exhibit. Then at 9:30, Greg Schultz will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, a look at local and regional headlines. Colorado's Health Department is expanding the availability of free rapid antigen testing kits to detect COVID-19 infections at home. Authorities are building on the model developed to enlist libraries, fire stations, and other community sites to distribute free, high-quality masks. As with the KN95 masks, supplies of the at-home testing kits are limited. The state health department urges members of the public to verify the kits are available at their nearest participating location before going to pick them up. More information is available online at covid19.colorado.gov/testing. Closures due to the President's Day holiday and freezing temperatures may cause a lag in data on COVID-19 cases throughout the Front Range. The state's data dashboard was not updated on Monday, and cold weather has closed down dozens of testing locations across the Denver metro area and into the mountains today, as they did yesterday. Public health officials in many Front Range counties relaxed masking rules in recent weeks in response to sharp declines in Omicron case rates. The United States Supreme Court announced yesterday it will be taking up a Colorado case. Denver-based graphic designer Lori Smith is challenging Colorado's anti-discrimination law, saying it violates her free speech and religious rights. Smith argues that having to provide wedding design services to same-sex couples runs counter to her religious views, and that an anti-discrimination law that prevents her from posting her refusal to serve same-sex clients inhibits her free speech. As part of the High Court's announcement, it said it would only take up the free speech issue of the case by deciding if the law requiring an artist to speak or stay silent violates the free speech clause of the First Amendment. Colorado was also the origin of a similar case to go before the Supreme Court, that of the baker who refused to make a wedding cake for a same-sex couple. Denver City Council voted 12-1 last evening to approve Mayor Michael Hancock's nomination of Armando Saldate as the city's new director of public safety. Saldate most recently served as the assistant deputy executive director of the department and has over 30 years of experience in law enforcement. Councilperson Candy Sitabaca was the lone vote opposing Saldate's nomination. According to the Denver Post, Sitabaca blames Saldate for damaging relationships with police reform advocates and causing his predecessor, Murphy Robinson, to remove all public safety department personnel from the community-led Reimagine Policing and Public Safety Task Force. The Denver Post reports Saldate told council members he is committed to starting a productive dialogue with the task force and that he has already reached out to Dr. Robert Davis, the coordinator of the project. A ballot proposal aims to limit the assessed value of Colorado properties in order to provide tax relief for property owners. Republican State Representative Colin Larson of Littleton and Democrat State Representative Alex Valdez of Denver filed the ballot proposal last week. If passed, the initiative would limit the variability of property values used by county assessors by a rate of 3% or that of inflation, whichever is less. The lawmakers, along with civic and business leaders, are backing their measure as a recent report by Colorado Concern says skyrocketing property values are leading to higher tax burdens for many property owners across the state, especially as values rise by as much as 30% over the next 4 years. If the state's title-setting board approves the proposal filed by the lawmakers, supporters will then need to collect close to 125,000 signatures in order for the proposal to make it to an election ballot. A hazardous weather advisory is in effect for northeast and north central Colorado. The National Weather Service expects cold temperatures again today, with highs in the single digits. Residents are advised to dress in layers and avoid prolonged exposure outdoors, as frostbite is possible within 30 minutes. Snow is expected to continue throughout the day and into the evening. This will create slick conditions on roads and sidewalks, so please drive and walk carefully. Outside the Boulder studio, it's minus 2 degrees. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. It's 10 minutes after the hour, and I am joined by Shay Castle live via Zoom. Good morning, Shay.
Good morning.
So it was a five-hour city council meeting last night. Give us the highlights.
Feels like the good old days. They tackled quite a bit. We got three health briefings from public health officials with Boulder County on COVID, teen suicide, and fentanyl overdoses. The council talked about where they are with tribal consultations and their work to draft a land acknowledgement and possibly transfer ownership or management over of some open space land to the tribes who originally inhabited this land. And we also talked about a possible tax that will be on ballots this fall to fund the city's climate change work.
Okay, dig into the public health aspect, because it seems like that could have been a meeting in and of itself.
It really could have. This was the first COVID briefing we got where it wasn't actually about the numbers, the number of cases and the test positivity, which I think the number of cases is around 200 new cases per 100,000 residents in the last 7 days. Test positivity is under 5% for the first time in a while, which is where we want it to be. It's still 4.7, so it's on the high end, but under 5 is great. And then in regards to, you know, suicidal ideation and attempts are up across almost all age groups in Boulder County. The last couple of years have obviously been very difficult for a lot of folks, particularly youth suicide. The public health officials are concerned about, because it's up quite a bit. That is, again, attempts and ideation. Deaths are not trending up, and they're not entirely sure why that is, but they're still looking into that. So obviously also an item of concern. Fentanyl overdoses are up as well. This has been a big issue in the community recently. Lots of panic and scary stuff out there, because such small amounts of it can result in overdoses. And as we've seen the parents of teens speaking out, you know, like kids do, sometimes they experiment, and with fentanyl, it can be just a little bit in something that's not supposed to have it. And then people are dying. The numbers of overdoses are still relatively low, but obviously no overdoses, death is good. So those were the three big items they brought forward, and that they're working on really as public health crises.
And in order to get inside of somebody's head to know about suicidal ideation, how did they collect that data? Did they get into that at all?
Yes, this is a great point. Actually, the data that they had was emergency room visits for suicidal ideation or suicide attempts. So there could be, you're correct, a lot more people suffering with that. All we know is who goes to the emergency room.
And at the same time, you've reported in the past about how mental health services within Boulder, I mean, Colorado in and of itself is in a pretty bad situation when it comes to the network for psychological care, but also in Boulder, there are how many open spaces in Mental Health Partners, for example? I mean, it's in the dozens?
I don't know the exact number, but it's a lot smaller than I thought it would be. And MHP is struggling with staffing challenges, as so many businesses are. And it's a tough field. And and not amazing pay. So it's really hard to keep people, as you can imagine. We're getting a lot of money for mental health and for drug addiction specifically from some settlements with opioid manufacturers. And there's a lot of money in the state and federal budget for improved mental health care, specifically during COVID. So there is a plan to shore that up, as council went over last week when they said how they plan to spend their ARPA funding, which is the American Rescue Plan. So maybe we'll see some relief in the next few years. And part of that will hopefully be folks wanting to take those jobs, because we can't do anything if there aren't workers to do the work.
And certainly it's better to get the mental health help rather than make it a law enforcement issue. And I want to ask you, for people who do need help, where can they get it within Boulder County? People who are having suicidal ideation, who may have addiction problems, what have you, where can they get that help now that there is federal funding for those mental health services?
Well, it'll be a while before the funding is actually allocated for those, but you know, the county health officials continue to point people toward mental health partners, as they have a range of services, specifically with suicidal ideation and teens. There's a nonprofit called Arise that they also directed folks to. Any of the national hotlines as well, I'm sure would help. But as far as the health officials go, that's where they were directing folks.
Right. Let's get into the climate part of the meeting. What exactly happened there?
So nothing was decided. It was just a study session, but council was very on board with a staff proposal to bring a new tax forward on the ballot this year, this fall, that will take the existing climate action plan tax and the utility occupation tax. Those are two taxes that are in play to fund climate change work. They're going to replace those with kind of one like master climate change tax that is more modern. It's more equitable. It charges folks and businesses according to how much energy they use, and it therefore charges industry and commercial residents more. That will raise about $5 million a year if that's the level that they decide to set it at. Council was supportive of that level, which is about a 25% increase on what we're spending now. And this will really go toward mitigation and resilience. As staff noted in the recent change in our climate strategy, it's no longer just about trying to reduce emissions. Now we have to actually contend with the realities of climate change, as we saw with the Marshall Fire and other extreme events. We have to be resilient in the face of those as well.
And the last point you mentioned about the land acknowledgement, what's happening there?
Well, there is a text out. It may continue to evolve as tribal leaders give input, but it's I tweeted the full text of it. It'll be on the city website sometime soon, acknowledging the history of this land that, you know, belonged to people before colonialists and white settlers got here. And it also acknowledges a lot of the violence and harm that's been perpetuated against Indigenous peoples. And as the staff said, this is an evolving document, because as our relations with the tribes evolves, so will our acknowledgement of our relationship, both good and bad.
And you can find that tweet and Shay in general on Twitter at Shay Shine Castle. That's her handle. You can also find her at boulderbeat.news. Shay, thanks so much, as always, for coming on the program to sum up the happenings of city government.
Thanks for having me.
Up to one-third of Colorado residents within the working age population have criminal records. Because of a complicated and expensive petition process, only 5% of people who qualify to seal their records are able to do so. A new bill before the state legislature aims to automate the process. For more, KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with Kyle Piccola, Senior Director of Communications for Healthier Colorado.
Kyle Piccola, thank you for joining me today.
It's great to be here, Alexis. Thank you for having me.
So to start, can you tell me about SB 099? What is it? Who crafted it, and who is it supposed to help?
Sure, I'd love to. SB 2299, it's commonly referred to as clean slate legislation. There are 1.3 million Coloradans today who have an eligible record that could be sealed if they knew the process or could go through the petition process. The current process is a petition-based process and generally inaccessible to the public. People don't know that they can go and petition to have their record sealed. Roughly 5% of people go through the process to have their record sealed. So what we're trying to do is automate that process. So the day you become eligible, you don't have to proactively go and petition the court. The court will know that your record is eligible for sealing and will then seal it.
So if I commit a crime, and what would make me eligible for this legislation?
I think that's a really good question, and it's a really important piece of why this bill is so popular. So if I have completed my sentence, and importantly, have not committed another crime. So these individuals are many years out from completing their sentence. So much research has proven that the longer someone goes without committing another crime, the likelihood of recidivism drops dramatically. They are less likely to commit another crime than the general public. So this is a population who has truly made amends for their crime, has truly made amends with society, and are really doing what they need to do to put a roof over their head, find meaningful work, and support their families.
It's interesting because, you know, 1.3 million people who aren't working are a huge drain on, like, that is expensive for people.
Yeah, I think you raise a good point. So this is a big problem with a massive impact on millions of Coloradans. There are 1.3 million people, if you do the math, is roughly one third of Colorado's working age population. So this is one third of people who have these barriers in front of them who potentially aren't earning their full scale of income, and they're not pursuing careers that they want to pursue. I mean, we in Colorado, we need healthcare professionals, right? We need teachers, we need truck drivers. These are all things that Colorado needs and that Colorado's economy would benefit from. And this is one way we can get those barriers out of the way to strengthen our workforce and build families and build strong, safe communities as well. These are values that everybody agrees on. And it's extremely inefficient and costly to keep folks from pursuing better employment opportunities, especially when we know that this is a group of citizens who have done everything they could do to make amends and are eager to join the workforce and do what they want to do professionally.
Well, Kyle Pikola, thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate it.
I've had a great time. Thank you so much for your interest in this important bill, and hopefully we can connect again when it's signed.
Kyle Pikola is Senior Director of Communications at Healthier Colorado, a nonprofit working to pass a clean slate legislation. For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Only 10% of Russians support an invasion of Ukraine. Meanwhile, support among Ukrainians to join NATO has jumped from 40% to over 60% in recent months. In the meantime, Congress here is divided on how to respond. The Senate adjourned for last weekend's long holiday without agreeing on a response. Conservative writer Sohrab Ahrami in the Washington Post said, quote, America can't and mustn't go to war with Russia over Ukraine. President Biden stated this inescapable truth at his Wednesday news conference and sent foreign policy hawks into a sputtering rage, close quote. Senator Ted Cruz disagreed, claiming the debate about force was a straw man and arguing for projecting strength. Quote, nobody reasonable wants to go to war with Russia or send U.S. troops to Russia, but we have lots of tools other than force. Weakness is provocative. Use truth, strength, and sanctions, not force. Democrat Senator Chris Coons supports taking force off the table and instead providing aid to nearby allies. Quote, I would not support sending American troops into Ukraine in response to a Russian invasion because, frankly, I think we would simply be sacrificing them. I think the Russians would escalate dramatically. So most of the debate revolves around sanctions and whether they should be put into place before a potential invasion. Germany, in the meantime, has already canceled work on its pipeline with Russia, and the U.S. Senate just rejected a Cruz bill to place sanctions on those involved in the pipeline. Senate Democrats have worked with Biden to press for a package of harsh sanctions that would be triggered after a Russian invasion. There's a bipartisan bill to let Biden do a lend and lease agreement directly with Ukraine to speed up military supplies. Senator Wicker said, quote, now is the time to actually show that we're going to try to provide the weaponry to the Ukrainians to actually defend themselves. So although the Senate did not vote for any of these sanctions proposals before taking their long President's Day weekend recess, they did pass a sense of the Senate resolution, a non-binding piece of paper stating, quote, unwavering United States support for a secure, democratic, and independent Ukraine, while recommitting the United States to, quote, providing political, diplomatic, and military support, including additional lethal and non-lethal security assistance to strengthen the defense of the country. But the lack of a bipartisan agreement on a sanctions bill left Congress not approving any new security assistance for Ukraine. While providing Ukraine with more weapons to resist Russian aggression has broad bipartisan support, shipping arms typically takes the U.S. government months after congressional approval to process and deliver to Kyiv. Some senators now are, quote, hopeful that we can still get some of those pieces in, maybe to the 2022 omnibus or someplace else. If you have thoughts on Ukrainian military assistance, you can contact your congressperson or senators. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars to talk about something many of us deal with this time of year, and that is dry skin. I heard the towels are one of the leading causes of dry skin. That's just sort of the joke. Anyways, we always need to remember that our skin is really nourished from what goes inside our body. So things like drinking more water, using good quality fats, like making our own salad dressing. And avocados are a great source of natural fats. Don't worry about how many calories they are, because there's also an enzyme in there called lipase that helps to digest fats. We can also eat foods that help to strengthen our skin, like winter squash, sweet potatoes, carrots, and eating vegetables with the skin on. Now, this time of the year, when most people have the heat on, that can be very dehydrating. So you may want to get a humidifier. If you have a wood stove, think about putting a pot of water on the stove. This is a great way to diffuse some essential oils. You might want to add some fir or pine or spruce essential oil and make the home just smell delightful while you're supporting your lungs. The best time to apply a moisturizer is right when you've gotten out of the tub and you're a bit moist, or out of the shower. So put the moisturizer on, and I have found that using moisturizers that contain petroleum or petroleum-based products, petrolatum, are not really something our skin does that well with. So I would look for more natural products that are using things like coconut oil, grapeseed oil, almond oil. We do absorb about 60% of what we put on our skin, so yeah, you better be able to pronounce most of those ingredients. There's also some herbs that have a moisturizing effect. So, of course, besides drinking more water, we could be drinking some herbal teas that contain mucilage or a lubricating quality, marshmallow root, linden flower, are two of the really moisturizing herbs that I think of. And when you go to bed at night and you have the heat on all night, that's sort of like being in a dehydrator. So get cozy with a lot of blankets, warm up the bedroom, and then before it's time to actually go to sleep, turn the heat way down. Not only will you save energy, save your skin, but you also save on those heating bills, which do seem to get high. Thanks for joining me on Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Special thanks to Stacey Johnson, Shay Castle, Alexis Kenyon, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. If you'd like to make a comment about something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings. Stay tuned for the Hightower Lowdown and then A Public Affair with Rosanna Longobetter. That's after the news headlines from the BBC.